adventurers coming in under the radar of ordinary society, an unholy alliance of the tech world and the world of organized descent. Welcome to the Cyber Corporation. Cyberpunks.
And welcome to the sixth edition of Bite Me, the IRG's radio program. Let's see, tonight with us in the studio, we've got Thomas Icom, Binary, Black Ice, Verk, Hack Dog's floating around here somewhere, and as always, St. Anarchy's floating around here somewhere. Now, let's see, a couple things I wanted to go over tonight. I've got a bunch of people emailing me asking when the next issue of Fantasy is going to be out. We had planned on putting it out last night, but due to some inclement weather around here, we've decided to postpone till the end of the week. This was due to some excessive heat that we have around here. You know, up in New England, if you don't like the weather, just wait about 30 seconds. It'll change. It's a nice, crisp 50 degrees here in the studio tonight. So we're all enjoying a nice ice-cold beer, and we suggest you do the same. Now, let's see, on to other matters. IRG releases. Let's see, coming out within the next 2 weeks, we're going to have the following items. There'll be two tech journals coming out back-to-back. I'm not going to go into what they're about, but I think you'll enjoy them if you check them out. I'm expecting the first one to be on the web pages probably a week from tonight, and the second one will follow directly after that, probably within 4 or 5 days after that. There'll be also some file updates coming up on the page. There's a few programs I've been working on, which I've been hesitating on whether to release to the public domain, but since the government has seen fit to continue to harass people, I think it's about time we released a few of our security utilities to the general population at large. I think you'll enjoy them, and I know there's some similar programs out there, but I think you'll find the code on ours a little bit tighter and a little bit faster than what you're used to. Well, that's it for me tonight on the introduction. I'd like to turn it over to Binary now, who's going to continue his series he's been running with. And here's Binary.
Hi, this is Binary. Last week I talked about DSL and the method delivery, the local loop. This week I will be talking about DSL basic security. And I still haven't gotten my DSL on yet, so it'll be a few weeks before I can talk about actually implementing it under Linux or FreeBSD. Now on basic DSL security issues. The recent explosion of denial of service attacks on popular websites like Yahoo, CNN, and eBay have raised the average user's concerns about internet security. DSL offers customers many benefits such as high-speed connections from 10 to 100 times faster than dial-up, simultaneous voice and data over the same phone line, and choice of their internet provider. DSL also provides customers with an always-on connection, which means consumers can maintain their DSL internet connection 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Unlike dial-up, this creates a greater window of time that attackers have the opportunity to compromise your computer's security measures, if any security measures at all. DSL is inherently more secure than other broadband communications, namely cable modem service. DSL is a point-to-point connection between a consumer's home and a telephone company's switching office. Cable, on the other hand, is a point-to-point multi-protocol connection that shares the network connectivity among homes in a neighborhood, much like a shared LAN. In addition, with DSL, each customer has a separate private virtual circuit, a unique connection that authenticates and secures the communication between the customer's PC and the internet. Despite the obvious advantages of DSL, anybody who establishes a dial-up always-on internet connection incurs the same security risk. A number of standard measures are available to users that they can use to protect themselves. The most simple and common are as follows. Turn off file and print sharing in Windows. Turn off the option that lets others look at files and use a printer. To do so, if you don't know how to do so, you have three choices. One, put the computer in the box and return it. And take up fishing. Two, purchase a book on Windows for dummies. And three, the most common, instead of attempting to learn something, call the neighborhood 12-year-old keyboard jockey and have him set it up for you. Fortunately, I've seen this done far too many times. Something as simple file sharing and the default Microsoft configuration allows full access to the system. Next, set up strong passwords and some virus scanner mechanism. Make sure that passwords are at least 8 characters and include lowercase and capital letters. And special characters such as the dollar sign, asterisk, or pound sign, if allowed by the operating system. Attackers can also use dictionary files or word banks to brute force passwords. Install software that will scan the system for computer viruses that may have been received when sharing files with others. Update the virus scanner software frequently. I can't stress that enough. Often I hear people say, I can't get viruses, I have antivirus software. Sure, the software that came with the system, that's almost 2 years old. New viruses and exploits are constructed on a daily basis. Update your damn software. Most new software can automatically update itself on the own over an internet connection. Also, consider a hardware firewall separate from the PC. Many hardware firewall solutions offered on the market today meet enterprise needs. For consumers, many DSL modems and residential gateways will soon include firewall functionality for protection. Or, install a software firewall on PCs. Many quality software firewall programs will effectively protect a PC from a hacker attack. Several of these programs are free, and others charge a nominal fee. For more information, visit Gibson Research's website at https://ne.dll?bh0bkyd2 for more information about commercial software firewalls. The site also has a program that quickly checks the security of a computer's connection to the internet. 4 common programs are Black Ice Defender at www.networkice.com, Zone Alarm at www.zonelabs.com, Norton Internet 2000 at www.semantic.com, and Virus Scanner Guard Dog at www.mcafee.com. In addition, Windows 98 SE has a feature called Internet Connection Sharing, ICS, which allows network PCs in the home to hide behind a central PC and use its IP address. Thus, with NAT, or Network Address Translation, potential hackers cannot see network devices behind the central PC. Also, shared file service, file and print sharing on the PC running ICS are not acceptable from the Internet. Other options, encryption and virtual private networking. For protected communications with others over the Internet, consider using encryption software such as SSH, which will securely encode data and decode at the receiving end. Also, many companies are beginning to use virtual private networks, hardware and software solutions that enable corporate users to establish secure tunnels between their homes and their corporate LANs, which is perfect for telecommuters. Now, I can get into VPNs and such, but I'll save that for a later show. To sum up, a number of effective solutions protect access to the Internet from unwarranted attacks, but DSL has a number of advantages given the nature of its technology and network infrastructure. The most important note is that the connection between the user and the Internet is owned solely by the specific user. It is secure and provides authentication. That's all I have for this week. Next week, I will be going over frequently asked questions about DSL. Now I'm going to pass you over to Thomas Icon, and she has to say.
Good evening. This is Thomas Icon, and you're listening to the IIRG's radio show, Bite Me. We've got a couple things up for you this evening. For starters, I received a couple of catalogs in the mail a couple days ago, and I thought I might share them with you. The first one is for those of you who are seeking a knowledge of an underground and alternative nature. That's the catalog from Delta Press Limited. Contains pretty much an A to Z listing of various topics ranging from homemade explosives to the underground economy to weaponry, electronics, survivalism. Their website is www.deltapress.com. You might want to surf over there and get a complimentary copy of their catalog. A lot of good info in it. The other catalog I received this week has to do with more for electronics and communications hobbyists. It's a company that's been around for quite a while, Fair Radio Sales, out of Lima, Ohio. And all they deal in is surplus electronics, mostly military surplus electronics. If you want to pick up something, for example, like a U.S. military PRC-25 backpack radio, they have it in here. They also have Watkins Johnson 8737, 8716, and 87-18 SIGINT grade receivers, Collins R390 shortwave receivers, and a whole host of interesting military surplus electronics. They have a website as well, and that is www.fairradio, that's F-A-I-R-R-A-D-I-O, one word, .com. And I highly recommend those two catalogs to be in your library. Continuing with last week's topic on survivalism, we have a classic talk here that was originally given a few years back by the Omega Man. Well, I was in touch with the Omega Man a short while ago, and he slightly updated the original article that appeared in CyberTech on survival preparations, and that's what we're going to continue with this evening. Now, as Carl wrote, the first thing you should do with any survivalist preparations is to present as much of a profile of the, quote, average man in the street, end quote, as possible. Now, I know this may upset some of our more colorful listeners, but then again, the decision is yours. What's more important in your mind, a little self-expression now or less hassle not only today but also after the shit hits the fan? If you want to express yourself today, protest to whatever the government is up to, write seditious articles, or engage in similar controversial activities, then you should go and adopt a second identity and keep the two separate. Not only is this a wise decision, but it's also perfectly legal. According to common law, you have the right to go by any name you wish as long as no illegal intent is shown. In fact, I think every survivalist should have at least one alternative identity kept handy in case the shit hits the fan. Now, paper tripping is getting a little more difficult these days, but as the country continues to slide more into third worldism, you're going to see more incompetence at the hands of our local bureaucrats, and that's going to make things a little easier. There are several books out there that are on the subject of various approaches to go about acquiring alternative identity. And if I get sufficient interest, that'll probably be the topic for a future talk here over on Bite Me. Second objective you should aim for is to acquire as much knowledge as possible in a wide range of fields as possible. Ignorance really is no excuse, and anyone who doesn't believe that is either misguided or brain dead. To assist you in any situations which may come up today, you should have a working knowledge in as many technological, outdoor, scientific, and military subjects as possible. There was a really interesting quote by Robert A. Heinlein in one of his books, which he went into all these topics that a human should be capable of doing, and in the end he said specialization is for insects. Some of the things you might want to study are firearms and other weaponry, computers, electronics, camping and other outdoor skills, mechanics, hunting and trapping, foraging, homesteading, agriculture, chemistry, and medicine. And that just really scratches the surface of topics that's there that you can acquire knowledge on. Now, while you won't be able to learn everything, you can at least strive to learn as much as you can. You also should want to learn how your ancestors lived in the previous century before everything was mass-produced by corporations and people had to do it themselves. This knowledge will also prove to be invaluable. To start, you can go to your local library and take out some books on the above topics which interest you the most. While the range of books is probably going to be limited to non-controversial subjects, you'll still be surprised just how much info is there. For example, in a typical library, you should be able to pick up books on mechanics, computers, electronics, outdoor skills, and firearms. With these five topics, you will acquire knowledge on how to keep essential equipment running when support for them fails, learn how to make state-of-the-art communications and analytical systems that will keep you in touch and make strategic decisions based on data you receive, design sensor and information gathering systems to tell you what's going on with the outside world, stay alive and prosper in primitive conditions, and defend yourself against attack. Essentially, from having knowledge in those four skills, you've gained a significant edge in successfully surviving disasters ranging from economic depression to natural disasters to a government dictatorship's rise to power. Now, if you live near a college or an open military post, you should also check out their libraries, too. They usually contain more specialized knowledge. Now, on the more hardcore topics, there are still several good mail-order outlets which sell information on various survivalist-related topics. We just mentioned Delta Press earlier in this show. They're one mail-order outlet you want to get in touch with. The stuff's become a lot harder now that one of the leading sources of survivalist information, Paladin Press, pretty much sold out to the feds by agreeing out of court to no longer publish some books. That came about because some family sued them. Allegedly, someone committed a murder, and a copy of their now out of print book, Hitman by Rex Farrell, was found in the suspect's possessions. So naturally, according to the justice system in country today, the victim's family, of course, went and sued Paladin Press, and Paladin Press went and wimped out. Personally, if I was Peter Lund, I just would have automatically taken every one of those books that they decided to go out of print and put them in the public domain and throw them up on their website just to say fuck you, but I digress. At any rate, if a particular topic piques your interest, then you can pursue it further. Most technological and outdoor enthusiasts are more than happy to help you learn. They're educational institutions which offer courses on the whole spectrum of scientific fields. And if you look around, you possibly could even find some veteran or sympathetic member of the National Guard or Reserves who will give you some advice on how to stay alive in hostile situations. The second stage of acquiring knowledge is keeping informed about the world around you. Now, this is harder than it seems these days. Yeah, it's true that we live in the information age, but most of the info is tainted. It's real easy to learn that Joe Blow killed his wife because she was servicing the milkman, or, that Donald Trump went and bought another city block, but it's really hard to find out news that affects you or has some significance on your existence. You can thank the mass media for that. And personally, in my opinion, I think mass media news reporters should be the first up against the wall when the revolution hits. At any rate, if you really want to stay informed, I suggest you stay away from television, newspapers, and other forms of mass media. It's, most part propaganda for the New World Order, and, hey, American people have been getting screwed ever since just after the Civil War. And they're still trying to think of ways to take away your rights and keep you from figuring out what's going on so they can screw you some more. There are several alternatives out there which are a million times better than the traditional mass media. Two of them are alternative press publications and international shortwave stations. They offer a more objective and unbiased view than the TV networks and publishing corporations. You generally don't get a large spoonful of attempted brainwashing when you peruse them. This is important because you'll be using this information to determine information that's going to be necessary to your very survival, and also when your line in the sand is crossed, so you have to go and implement your contingency plans. All that's needed to receive international shortwave broadcasts is a radio receiver capable of picking up that shortwave radio band, which ranges from 1.6 to 30 megahertz. These receivers are available from Radio Shack and mail order outlets such as Sea Crane, and you can pick one up starting at about $60 US. When you start listening to stations such as Radio Sweden, the BBC, my favorite, Radio Deutsche Welle, that's Germany's shortwave station, and others, you'll notice a tremendous difference between domestic broadcasts like CBS. Which, in my opinion, should stand for the Columbia Brainwashing Service. As far as alternative press information, it's out there. Some of the stuff you can get at newsstands or, places that deal with alternative publications, such as punk rock record stores. Another thing you can look for is at your local Barnes & Noble or Borders. There is a magazine called Zine Guide, and they contain an entire list of alternative publications. Most of it actually has to do with music scenes, but there are a couple of little gems in there if you look through that you might want to subscribe to. One magazine which is seeing rather common use out there, it's not really available for the outlets, although those of you in Connecticut can pick it up at Trash American Style on Mill Plain Road in Danbury. It's a copy of The Free American. That's a fairly decent publication. It's a little too religiously conservative in some instances, but then again, this is coming from someone who's an ordained heathen minister. So, that's my opinion. But it's still a good publication. You might want to check it out. And, of course, there's Stephen Barry's The Resister, the official periodical of the Special Forces Underground, which I highly recommend. We had information on how to subscribe on that in an earlier issue of Bite Me, and the subscription information is also available on the Connecticut Survivalist Alliance webpage, which is up on my homepage at www.iirg.org/TildeTICOM, TICOM/. Now, while you're also preparing your mind, you should also be preparing your body. You should take up a sport and include it in your daily routine. Mental knowledge is useful, if you don't have the physical strength and conditioning, you're going to be at a pretty marked disadvantage. Things you might want to take up are martial arts, running or walking, endurance weightlifting, which is different than powerlifting, and believe it or not, for those of you who might be have a slant this way, although it's not my thing, tennis is also another good sport for increasing endurance and dexterity. While this does take up some time, it's very good for you both now and in the future, and you also feel pretty better overall. Once you've assumed your low profile and start acquiring knowledge, you can start on the planning and preparation phase of survivalism. The first thing you should do at this stage is to make an assessment of what you have that could help you in a survival situation, and what you'll further need in order of priority to bring your preparedness up to a sufficient level. This seems the hardest part of getting ready, but once you reach this stage, you should have acquired sufficient knowledge of the best way for you to go about doing this. At this stage, you've also acquired, at very little cost, a wide variety of knowledge in many different fields, which will be a big help for you now and in the present. This may seem a pretty tall order, considering that all the things they have to do. I mean, I know people are busy, but, it's not really very, very hard to do, especially when you, take the old television out to the rifle range and put a few rounds through it. Well, that's all I've got for this evening. Your feedback's always appreciated, and I can be reached via email at TICOM, that's TICOM, at IIRG.org. Next week, we'll be getting a little more into survivalist topics, such as preparation planning. And we'll also be discussing a little more on communications and electronics. That's it, and have a good evening. We're going to be bringing it over to Mercenary now.
That rousing speech, it almost makes me want to put down my beer and actually take up a sport. Like, that'll be the day. But now, on to future events. We're going to bring you over here to Black Ice. We've got a little talk for you.
Greetings all. Just a little talk, nothing major tonight. I just wanted to give everyone an update of what's going on with Sony and the new PlayStation 2. Anyway, for those of you that have been keeping up with the news, in July they're going to be releasing a mouse that will be integrated with the USB type ports on the PS2. This will help bridge the gap in a simple console game to a net-capable machine. It just means more things to play with. And they're also talking about an external CD-ROM with this release. So as I've heard it before, I'm sure all you mod enthusiasts and pirates are thinking, external burner. Anyway, that'll be for future discussion. They're also going to be bringing out digital camera integration and a bunch of other goodies. So either way, the mod squad will continue to compile readily available material on this animal, and in due time have something comprehensive for all of you to play with. On another note, the IRG SIGINT instructions and applications are on my RF hacking page. So you can grab that if you're interested. For all you need to know, the URL is www.irg.org/tilde/black_ic/rfhacking.html. Later this week, I'll get together and compile a section with all the material I've received regarding this project and its results. And for those of you who aren't aware, Postcards from the Edge BBS is accessible via the web as well as Telnet. Just go to the main IRG page for instructions. Get on board, have fun. There's a wealth of information available, both in users and posts. All that aside, I'm going to pass this off to FERC, who's going to be talking about a discussion surrounding TCP congestion control.
Good evening, this is FERC of the IIRG. This is my first show, and I'll be discussing TCP congestion control with a misbehaving receiver. What we're going to talk about is about standard TCP/IP sockets not working the way they're supposed to. First thing I want to get to tell you is about the standard mechanisms that TCPI uses for communications. End-to-end congestion control mechanisms, such as those used in TCP/IP, are the primary means used for sharing scarce bandwidth resources on the Internet. These mechanisms implicitly rely on both endpoints to cooperate in determining the proper rate at which to send data. Obviously, if the sending endpoint misbehaves and does not obey the appropriate congestion control algorithms, then it may send data more quickly than well-behaved hosts, possibly forcing competing traffic to be delayed or discarded. Less obviously, a misbehaving receiver can achieve the same result. I'll be talking about the vulnerabilities that this misbehaving receiver is possible of doing. There's basically three ways to be a misbehaving receiver. One of the ways is by ACK division. TCP uses a byte error control protocol, and consequently, each TCP segment is described by sequence number and acknowledgement fields that refer to byte offsets within a TCP data stream. However, TCP congestion control algorithm is implicitly defined in terms of segments rather than bytes. During slow start, TCP increments CWND by at most SMS bytes for each ACK receive that acknowledges new data. During congestion avoidance, CWND is incremented by one full-size segment per round trip. The incongruence between the byte granularity of error control and the segment granularity of congestion control leads to the following vulnerability. Upon receiving a data segment containing a certain number of bytes, the receiver divides the result acknowledgement into separate acknowledgements, each covering one of distinct pieces of the received data segment. The other attack is the dupe ACK spoofing. TCP uses two algorithms, fast transmit and fast recovery, to mitigate the effects of packet loss. Fast transmit algorithm detects loss by observing three duplicate acknowledgments and immediately retransmits what appears to be missing segments. However, the receipt of duplicate ACK also suggests that segments are leaving the network. Fast recovery algorithm employs this information as defined in RFC 2581. The third type of attack is the optimistic ACKing. Implicit in TCP algorithms is the assumption that time between data segments being sent and acknowledgement for that segment returning is at least one round trip time. Since TCP's congestion window growth is a function of round trip time, an exponential function during slow start and linear function, sender-receiver pairs with short round-trip times will transmit data more quickly. However, the protocol does not use any mechanism to enforce its assumption. It's possible for a receiver to emulate a shorter round-trip time by sending ACKs optimistically for data that it has not yet received.
These attacks have basically been implemented on a Linux box with a modified TCP stack. You can find more info at the University of Washington web server. The complete reference is at the Stefan Savage page. I don't have his address currently with me, but if you check out my website later this week, I'll have that address for you and some more information about TCP congestion. I'm going to turn you over now to Mercenary.
Okay, in closing tonight, I'd like to bring you a little editorial that we had come across our mailing list. I know some of you may be watching our favorite buddies down there, 2600 Magazine, reading their magazine, listening to their show, maybe belong to their mailing list. Well, I know it's kind of a sad state of affairs when 2600, the magazine that claims it wants to portray hackers in a positive manner, lowers itself to the level of juvenile 10-year-olds. Now, I know Eric Corley and 2600 Magazine feel that they are protecting the rapid loss of an individual's right to express themselves, but this is not the way to go about it. They're portraying the hacker community as nothing more than a group of idiots who are more likely to be spray-painting graffiti and throwing snowballs at cars in their spare time. Now, this is not the image we want the world to view the hacker community in. And maybe corporate America would be doing us all a favor by taking 2600 out of the picture once and for all. Now, I know some of you may disagree with me, but it's time 2600 Magazine learned that they can't not resort to juvenile antics if they want to fight corporate America. Instead of registering domain names like the little ones that they've registered, Verizon should spend more time fixing its network and less money on lawyers.com and VerizonReallySucks.com. Maybe they should actually be printing and pointing out this so-called weaknesses if they even have any reference material on it. Now, pointing out actual security faults in their network would be a far more viable hacker tactic than registering pathetic domain names. Unfortunately, 2600 Magazine has become the world daily news of the hacker world, loaded with more fluff than anything of quality. Do we really want 2600 portraying the hacking community in this manner? Our answer is a definite no, and I think everybody out there, your answer should be a definite no. Well, that's it for all of us here with the IRG tonight, and we'll see you next week. And now, I think, Binary, take me on out of here.
Yeah, this is 2600's idea of training the hacker community.
Oh, Emmanuel, Carter, this is the best 12th birthday present I ever had!
Something wrong with this beer, eh?
Take off. Do it.
Oh, good day. I'm Bob McKenzie. This is my brother, Doug.
How's it going, eh? We're those guys who talk over songs and wreck them, remember?
Yeah, here's another one.
Beauty, eh?
Okay, don't talk here.
Why not?
Because the guy's gonna sing.
Hey, I went to the doctor. Nobody at home. So I called up the hotline. I went for the tone. You see, I met me on water.
Part where I'm supposed to sing, eh?
No way, you put something in my beer, I'm gonna get you.
I didn't do it, you knob.